Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Quintessential Listening Poetry. Tonight, our very special guest is Claudine Nash. Claudine lives and writes in New York. She obtained a BA in English and Psychology from Wesleyan University and later went on to obtain two master's degrees and a PhD in Psychology from Connecticut College and St. John's University. Heavily influenced by her background in psychology, her poetry frequently delves into topics such as loss, healing, and the liberation of releasing the past. Her most recent writings have focused on the power of connecting to our authentic selves and true inner voice. Her collections include her full-length poetry books, The Wild Essential, Aldrich Press, Kelsey Books, 2017, and Parts Per Trillion, Aldrich Press, 2016, as well as her chapbook, The Problem with Loving Ghosts, Finishing Line Press, 2014. She has also edited an anthology of writing by people living with mental illness entitled Destigmatized Voices for Change, Madness Muse Press, 2017, as well as the book In So Many Words, Interviews and Poetry from Today's Poets, Madness Muse Press, 2016. Claudine's poetry has earned numerous literary distinctions, including Pushcart Prize nominations, nations, and prizes from such publications as Eye on Life magazine, The Song Is, 30 West Publishing House, Avalon Literary Review, and Lady Chaos Press. Internationally published, her poems have appeared in a wide range of magazines and anthologies, including Asimov's Science Fiction, Blazevox, Cloudbank, Haight-Ashbury Literary Journal, and Dime Show Review, among others, and has been integrated into various dance, visual, and musical art forms. Claudine, are you there?
I am. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being a guest on Quintessential Listening Poetry. What I'd like to do is to start, please share some of your work.
Oh, okay. I would love to. I'll begin with a poem I call Hold That Thought, because as you said from my bio, I'm also a psychologist, so I write a lot about psychology. This one was sort of my homage to cognitive behavioral therapy. So it's called Hold That Thought. Let's hold these thoughts far from our hearts, the time-worn ones that make us sink in doubt or draw us down when we pull forward. Let's roll them between our fingers and feel their thin cloth catch on our winter skin. We'll crumple them, lift them up to the window panes, watch the cold morning pour through the rips in their flimsy fabric. I want to lose them at the beach. We can slip them into the sea as the tide sets out, drop them into a deep hole, and watch the sand claim the shifting space where they sit. I'm done with these gnawing whispers. Let's be old school gangsters and make some silence. I'll get the concrete forms. You can toss them from the pier when the fog rushes the night. Thank you.
Right. Why do you think poetry is important?
Oh, there's so many reasons. But first off, I have to say I love poetry for its parsimony. And I think what makes it so powerful is its unique ability to just cut straight to the heart in a handful of words. You know, it really just connects us to the feelings that lie just beneath the surface, both when we write it and when we read it. And I think for those reasons, it really allows us to inhabit someone else's experience and connect us to the ones that we might have pushed out of our own awareness. So I think for this reason, it just makes it such a powerful tool for self-expression, but also for empathy and for understanding other people's realities.
Right. I think understanding another person's lived experience is extremely important. So empathy is a bridge to doing that. So thank you for that. What sparked your initial love of poetry? What sparked your initial love?
You know, it's just something that I always did from a very young age. It came very naturally. I think I was sort of a quiet kid and quite introspective, and I observed a lot. So I think it just lent itself very naturally to that type of art form. But later in life, you know, I always thought of myself as a poet, but I didn't write for many, many years. I put it aside to pursue a career in psychology. And, you know, it was only about 5 or 6 years ago that I started writing again. I was doing some work. I've always worked in the public health sector and, prisons and city hospitals. And I was working on an inpatient unit, a psychiatric inpatient unit with a colleague, psychiatrist Carlos Maniguru, who we ended up collaborating on a very large art and poetry project. But he used to begin each staff meeting with a poem as a way to help us connect and the team to connect to our feelings about the work we were doing. And, here I hadn't written for about 2 decades, and I was watching the team, and it just had such a powerful effect. So, you know, we had people who rarely shared or rarely spoke and would suddenly just open up in response to this poem. And it really made me think again about poetry and how I could use it. And also about, you know, I think it helped me want to connect to this sort of lost part of my own identity that I had put aside.
Yes. Yes. Well, will you share another piece?
Absolutely. This one is called You Wasted Nothing. You wasted nothing. You breathed energy into the ozone, recycling atoms of spent oxygen into pockets of positively charged air. Micro-moments were deemed thrilling things. Snow and sand, flecks of thin but wondrous matter. You savored day's existence, wiping clean near empty slates, prizing every piece of light that wrapped around each eyelash. You didn't spend an instant nursing anything but exuberance, spilling anything into the atmosphere that wasn't cut from love. And,
beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Please, would you like to talk about your inspiration?
Sure. Yeah, you mean like my literary inspirations or for that poem?
Yes, this particular poem.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, this is one, interestingly enough, I usually don't tell people this before I read it, but this one was actually about my late golden retriever.
Really?
But when I read it, I want people to connect to their own experiences and maybe think of, you know, a positive influence in their life. But to me, she was just like the most exuberant, loving creature. And I loved her positivity, and I thought we all had something that we could learn from her. But I'd like to, when I read it, I never say it's about a dog because some people aren't animal people, and I want them to, connect it to their own life, you know.
All right. Well, please share another.
Sure. In my clinical practice, you know, I always like to use sea glass as a metaphor for the way loss becomes less cutting over time. So this next piece is called Sea Glass. At some point, you began the process of becoming sea glass. Hazel green shards of torn bottle nursed on algae and kelp, twisted to sleep by channels of lenient sand, who draw your surface from memory, erasing the outline of your eyes in half speed until they no longer pull at my fingerprints. Cast into the sound in May, I will find you between muscles and an icy foam when I can run my finger down your side, pick you up in my ungloved hand. Thank you.
All right, beautiful. All of your work is beautiful. You're a brilliant artist. I enjoyed reading your work. Let me ask this question.
Oh,
thank you. You've been writing now for you said 5 years ago?
About 5-6 years now. Yeah.
You've been very, very prolific. Has your idea of poetry changed since you began writing these poems?
I think it has. I think initially when I first started writing, you know, it was more for myself to experiment and to help me reconnect to this part of myself. So I think initially I was, you know, writing more to, you know, for self-expression. But, you know, the more I've done it, the more I think I view what I write as something I'd like to be more inspirational. So mm-hmm. I'd like to use the poetry as, you know, a way to inspire others, to instill hope. I think that, you know, it's the psychologist in me. So I think I've been writing like bigger poems, you know, that are more about common experiences than you know, about my own per se. You know.
All right. Well, please share another.
Sure. So this is another one.
Two.
Okay. Sure. You know, the ones I've been reading have been from Parts Per Trillion, which was my last book. So this one is as well. And, you know, it's just in my experience that so many of us have something we wished we could have heard some, you know, important person from our past say to us. So this poem is called Certain Words. There are certain words you would wait a lifetime to hear, like you didn't ruin a thing, or the ground between us never turned to dust. Better still, look, here's a stack of envelopes made out to you. And upon inspecting their odd postmarks and stamps, feel love leak from their folds, or read scribbled between the lines of the onion skin sheets within, the explanation you've always wanted. Interwoven with the phrase, you were only briefly forgotten. But mostly, you would forfeit the scent of oncoming rain or abandon the sight of the swollen red moon just to be told. Please listen now. There's something I'm ready to say. Thank you. Okay. Sure. Yes. That's the end of that one.
To just soak it in. It's beautiful.
Oh, sure.
All right.
Thank you. That one actually came from, I got the idea of that one from an episode of Mad Men, of all places.
Oh, really?
something that one of the characters said that just made me think, oh, we just all wish we could hear something, you know.
So. All right. Well, we're ready for another piece.
Okay. So this one, I wrote this one in response to a really awful rejection letter. You know, usually when you get a rejection letter, they're kind of painless. It's, you know, like, oh, thank you, it wasn't a good fit for us, or, you know, thank you, but we're going to pass. But I got a particularly detailed one, a little more detailed than I wanted, and it left me curled up in the fetal position for a week. So this one came out of that experience. But in a wonderful turn of events, it actually went on to receive a Pushcart nomination from Marianne Slaw, who you, from The Song Is, who you recently had on as a guest. So yes. I just love that something as wonderful as a Pushcart nomination came from such a horrible experience. You know, so it just goes to show you, you know, you never know where things may lead you. So this one was the last poem in Parts Per Trillion. It transitioned into the next book. It's called That True Voice. It stirs upon waking, a hypnopompic hallucination of a song heard from a distance by muscles, not ears. Always it's moving, scattering about one's body before its lyrics can be fully known. For that first hour each morning, before the household rises, before the tasks of rushing and receiving the hoarse sounds of the day's business, before it could be outsung by those cold opinions from without and within, it hums in hopeful resistance, this self that's trying not just to live, that true voice that dares to thrive. Thank you. Okay.
Tell us about your process. Is it pen and paper, computer, notebooks? How do you write?
Yeah, you know, oftentimes once I get an idea, I like to play around with it in my head, you know, long enough to know where I'm going with it. I find sometimes if I just sit with a poem without even picking up a pen, you know, and hold it in my head, it's actually easier to write. So, you know, once I do that for a while, then I'll jot down a very raw, rudimentary version of it in a notebook. But from there, I'll then move it to my laptop and then take off in the editing process. The editing is actually my favorite part of writing. Getting the initial part out, I don't like the initial part because I usually hate whatever it is I put on the paper, but I love editing. It's like the nerd in me, I guess. But for me, it's just an act of mindfulness because I love getting lost in just a single line until I can get that one line perfect. So it's the one time when I could really just clear everything else out of my conscious thought process and just focus on that one line. So that's usually how I go. It's thinking, jotting, and then editing, which is my favorite part. But sadly, I've been having a harder time finding enough blocks of time to do that lately. But in an ideal world, that's how it works.
All right. Let me ask you another question. You talked about seagrass, I believe. Seagrass.
Yes.
What are some of the other predominant themes of your work?
Yeah, you know, so you know, my first two, the chap, the Problems with Loving Ghosts, and then Parts Per Trillion, were a lot about loss and longing and really the liberation of letting all that go and releasing the past. So that was where I started with. And then with the last book, The Wild Essential, I shifted more into, I guess I call it sort of my healing inspiring stage, or so I hope. But that was a collection that was a lot about the power of, you know, connecting to our authentic selves and, you know, pushing aside all our doubts and all the messages from society and all the chatter and noise that we live with in our heads and around us and really just connecting to our true self within. So that's what that collection was about.
All right. Well, let me ask this question. What exactly is an authentic self?
Yeah, you know, I think it's that true voice that, you know, like that poem, it's that true voice that's within us, that's you know, dying to come out. It's not who we, you know, think we should be or all the messages that we've received from, you know, the people around us, from the world around us, but it's just who we are. And it's, you know, it's the self that we sometimes push aside, that we lose touch with. That's who it is for me, at least. You know?
So if I say we are a poem, how would that fit in?
If we are a poem,
yes.
That is a poem. That sounds like a title of the next one, if you ask me. But Yeah,
I think it's
Oh no, you're gonna write that one. If we are a poem, then I think our authentic selves. It's each of the individual words we can contribute to that communal poem, you know, and we're each bringing a different word to it, you know.
All right. Well, again, you're very prolific. Where do you write?
I find it really helpful to have a designated spot. It's in classical conditioning, they call that stimulus control. Right?
Yes.
So I have a day bed in a spare room in the house. And what I love to do is I walk the dog ridiculously early in the morning before the neighborhood is risen. And I love taking him out when it's still dark out and the neighborhood's quiet. And that's mm-hmm. when I try to let some ideas simmer, and then I'll come back and sit in that day bed, you know, for the first hour in the morning and try and write there, you know.
All right. Well, let's take a brief break, and we'll be
okay.
Right back.
Okay.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram, and welcome to Quintessential Listening Poetry. The call-in number is 646-787-1631. Our special guest tonight is Claudine Nash. Claudine, favor us again.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so I'll read another one that I wrote. This one as almost a meditation, so feel free. I always tell people, feel free to close your eyes when I read this one. It's called You Are a Mountain. A river rock sits in you. No, a rock face. No, a mountain. Yes, a thick, unyielding mountain rises from a solid place within you. Its foothills spread into the corners where your doubts take root, then dislodge. No, displace. No, tear, yes, tear through the qualms and uncertainties that cloud you. Now you rub its grit between your fingers. Now you breathe this grassy terrain, and it covers, no, seals, no, reclaims the cracks and faults in your shaken ground. You are not a fragile matter. You are a height. No, an altitude, an elevation, something higher, a peak perhaps. Yes, an imposing, irrepressible peak. Yes. Yes. Thank you.
You know, when I read that, I wanted more. I wanted to hear more in terms of the no and the yes and the no and the yes. I mean, you really grabbed me with that particular piece, and again, it was very, very powerful, very powerful.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Another mm-hmm. question: in terms of parts per trillion.
Yes.
If you had to convince a friend or a colleague to read your book, what might you say to them?
That's a good question. I think I would say, you know, I try to talk about serious topics like loss and longing, but also do it in a quirky, funny way at times too. So even though the topics sound daunting, a lot of the poems are kind of funny, or I tried to make them be. So it's sort of a mixed bag. So I do have a love of the quirky. So I hope that came out in the collection as well.
All right. Well, favor us again.
Sure. Actually, you know what? Let me skip ahead. I could actually I'll read the poem parts per trillion.
Okay.
Which you know was the title poem. And that one I had gotten the idea of a old professor of mine who was also a dog lover had asked me. He said, "Did you ever hear about the dog who could smell time?" And you know, I looked at him. I said, "No, but that has to be a poem." You know. And, you know, and I started reading, and there was this dog who could, you know, they couldn't figure out how it knew what time of day it was. And then they finally realized that it could smell its owner's scent dissipating throughout the course of the day. And I just thought that was just such a powerful metaphor for loss and how we try to hold on to our memories. So, okay, so this one is called Parts Per Trillion. After passing another morning with you in mind, it strikes me how I may only be one whisker away from the dachshund who detects illness brewing beneath his handler's skin, from the lab who smells time decline through the decline of her human's odors across the course of the morning hours. I confess how easily I could be found sniffing at staircases like this, tracking the past in parts per trillion. As the postman approaches with a certified receipt, I will be sitting by the basement door, breathing in ornaments and their decaying trace of pine, inhaling phone books to snare that lingering hint of fingertip. The scent of last decade's ice storm will rise from old boots. Blackened bread pans and phantom loaves will preoccupy my nostrils. When he rings the bell, I will be wearing my beige bathrobe, inspecting the vents for the aroma of electricity, certain that it is leaking from your years-old heartbeat. Archived in some long forgotten space, somewhere under a piece of lace, behind a lone molecule of air. Thank you.
All right, all right. You know, knowing that your poems are published and out there in the world for everyone to read, do you feel that you're potentially validated? Does it validate your being a poet, or are you content knowing that they're just out of your system?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I'll admit, I always tend to like a poem a little bit better after it's been accepted somewhere. You know, like, I'm like,
right.
Oh, okay, someone else liked it too. You know? But then, you know, then of course there's the moment of panic. You know, like, oh my God,
that's
now everyone's actually going to read it. So it's a mixed bag. You know? No. But, you know, I've had the experience, and I tell people who are just starting out publishing also, you know, not to take it personally, because, you know, I've had almost every piece that's been accepted somewhere or that's won a prize, won a nomination for something, has been rejected somewhere else first. So I try not to hang all of my self-worth as a poet on the acceptances, because, you know, sometimes it's really just about fit with that particular publication or a style of writing that particular editor is looking for. So I always remind people that like, you know, my most like prize winning poems have all been rejected somewhere else before they won something or were nominated for something.
All right. So. Now, do you have a special ritual that you go through when you prepare to write?
You know, not so much a ritual. Well, you know, I have my pen that I tend to work with. I have a note, you know, one notebook I like, you know, my laptop. But I think for me, what's most important is clearing a space, both around me, like a physical space, but an internal one as well. So, you know, I can't write if I'm still thinking about work or the 3 million things I need to do around the house or, you know, what I need to do to help my daughter. You know, I have to push everything away and clear a space. So I do my best writing after I have a period of time away from everything. Like, you know, like 3 days into a vacation is when I tend to do my best work. So I say definitely like clearing a space is helpful. And the way, I guess, ritually, the way I could do that is by taking a walk in nature, being surrounded by the open world. There's also a physical space that helps me clear that internal one. So definitely like taking a walk out in the natural world is helpful.
Right. You know, all poets have several words that come up over and over again. Words or sentences that they can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words?
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so I went through a period where I used the word slip a lot. You know. I do have them because I try to take them out of my poems because they reappear so often. They're going to come to me later. But definitely, yeah. Slip was one of them. I'll probably by the end of the interview, I will definitely get to those. But I have them as well.
Well, do you have favorite poets?
Favorite poets? Oh, sure. I'd say going back from when I, was younger, I love lyricism and the. You like the sound of language, like the beauty of the sound of language, as well as accessibility.
Tell.
Yeah, thank you.
I can
so,
tell.
Yeah, I'd say my first loves, like as a teenager, were Yeats and Neruda, and also E. Cummings and Paul Simon, who I always considered a poet more than a musician. Those were definitely my first loves. But like I mentioned, I think because I want to use my poetry as something that could inspire healing or, empowerment, accessibility is very important to me. So I love, like, poets that have an accessible style, like Billy Collins and Mary Oliver. I love like imaginative and quirky writing too. So Robert Bly is someone who I adore and who's definitely inspired me. Yeah.
All right. Well, you have an anthology. Tell us more about your anthology.
Okay. I have one that I'm actually working on now with Dustin Pickering from Transcendent Zero Press. That's a collection of love poems, which I can mention more at the end. So we're currently working on that one. But I did edit two anthologies with Madness Muse Press and Adam Levin Brown, who's the publisher of that company. And we did a collection that I'm really proud of called Destigmatized Voices for Change. And Adam is very open in talking about his own struggles with mental illness. And he had put out a post, on Facebook, just talking about his experiences and his childhood experiences and, what's helped him get through, some rough episodes. And tons of people wrote in on his post and offered all these words of support. So, it gave him the idea of doing this anthology of poems and narratives about living with mental illness. And, I begged him to let me help him with this because this is my passion and particularly resiliency. So I wanted to see an anthology that would inspire people who are in the throes of their darkest struggles. And I wanted to, put together this collection that when people read that, they could see that they're not alone, that there is someone who has been through what they have been through and has found a way to get through it, whether it, be through psychotherapy, medication, hospitalization, meditation, whatever it was that helped that person. So we he put out this submission and we did this anthology. And then he sent it around to various psychiatric hospitals and mental health institutions in PDF form, to make it accessible.
Right. So you see the role of poetry in the modern day society as being extremely important.
Absolutely. I view it as a tool for empowerment. I use it in my clinical work. I work with people with severe persistent mental illness in an inner city hospital. Most of the folks I work with are used to being written off. you know, and we do poetry workshops and open mics because I want people to know that they have a voice that deserves to be heard. So I think it's such an important tool to really empower people to make their voices heard and to share their experiences. And, you know, and I think politically now we need it more than ever, you know, because we need to understand people's different realities, you know, before we judge them.
Well,
I definitely think.
Lift your voice.
Oh, you want to hear my okay.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I could read a fun one. Actually, you know what? I'll read the fun one next. I'll read one that came out of my clinical work. This was working with someone on our acute inpatient unit and you know, helping them like working with incredibly talented people who had so much to say. So this one's about helping someone light a fire within them rather than putting a fire out. It's called, okay. You Might Have Saved a Life. You might have saved a life tonight. On impulse, you might have looked a faintly known stranger straight in the eyes and caught sight of a life waiting to ignite. You might have reached in and kindled it, breathed wind into this heat that burns without flame, flicked a spark into a field of dry grass and yelled, live, or fire, or there is a gift in these ashes that needs to be scattered. Tomorrow, your stranger might awaken alert and recalled. They might set their wild fire free and watch it spread from sleeper to sleeper, until the world shakes itself alive and the murky sky starts glowing. You might have saved a life tonight. You might have saved us all. Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
I'm still processing.
Go right ahead.
please do so. I'm still processing. You value unique lived experiences. I can tell that. Who
Absolutely.
Are you as a result of writing poetry?
You know, I think poetry has helped me connect more to my authentic self. So I think, you know, it's helped me realize that, you know, I think we all have our unique and divine gifts. But, you know, I think for me, poetry's helped me realize that maybe I could be someone who could be inspirational to someone who's in a crisis or who's searching or lost or something like that,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, please share another.
Sure.
Or two.
Okay. I'll share one that I meant to be a funnier one that was in parts for Trillion. I just had to do something with all of those really irritating pharmaceutical commercials where they, you know, give you the fine print and speed, you know, high speed. So
I hate those.
Okay, well then you might like this one. It's
and
called
I
fine print.
I often thought about writing a piece myself on the fine print.
Okay, so this is called fine print. Warning, this memory may be habit forming. Abrupt discontinuation may lead to blunt appraisals of current life circumstances and a rebound of empty mood states. Prolonged exposure to this memory may result in rumination and habitual efforts at reenactment. Do not attempt complex mental operations while contemplating this memory, as it has been known to twist once linear thought processes into spinning loops and circles. This memory may leave you washed in infinite need. Listlessness and aimless daydreams are common side effects of this recollection. Seek immediate medical attention should you experience persistent swelling of the heart, lasting longer than reasonably expected for an otherwise rational being who indulges in reminiscence. In rare but serious cases, sadly warped perceptions of reality have occurred after replaying this memory. Pursue distraction until you could taper yourself from this memory and tuck it back into a less intrusive or entirely overlooked recess. That's the end of that one.
I hate those commercials with a passion. with a passion. So please share another.
Okay. Well, this next one, very joyfully, after being rejected other places, won the grand prize in the Artists Embassy International Dancing Poetry Contest.
Yes.
So, so as part of the prize, and this is the best prize you could think of. So as part of the prize, it was choreographed and performed by a dance company. So the Natika Angeli Poetic Dance Theater Company out in San Francisco put it to dance form. So I got to fly out there and read it for the audience before watching it performed. So that was a real treat.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So it's called How to Come Full Circle in 5 Steps, More or Less. Return to the place where you started and feel hope rise again like heat. Though this spot seemed so lost to you, slip back seamlessly into its loop. Note how its arc suits you. How it fits and fills the gaps and breaks, all the empty inches within you. Now summon the day the wind blew, the musts and shoulds, the can'ts and won'ts away from you. This is the moment that marks your re-beginning. Lean forward and draw on the past. Make sure to send yourself this message over and again. On a rolled slip affixed to tired carrier pigeon, or through the mint leaves that swirl through your cup. Spin 360 and soak in the stunning cuts of light that bound about this sight. Throw open your eyes and find yourself in this open-aired space. Changed. The same, gloriously reclaimed. Thank you.
Based on your experience with that particular piece of poetry and dance, what do you view as being the relationship between dance and poetry?
I love all art forms. I think they each have their unique power. So, I think if you can keep on the metaphor, I could see each movement being like a word, but, it's all about expression. Poetry is about expressing an image with words, whereas dance is, with one's body.
Yes.
But it's all about painting something, an expression, a feeling.
All right. Well, let's take another brief break, and we'll be
okay.
Right back.
Okay, sure.
Again, my name is Michael Anthony Ingram, Welcome to Quintessential Listening Poetry. The call-in number is 646-787-1631. We're here with Claudine Nash, and we're having a fantastic time. I'm enjoying our work, and hopefully you are too. People call in from all over the world, so again, hopefully we have some callers tonight. Some poetry,
okay.
Claudine. <Are you ready>? Some poets also have are creative in other areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry or literary activities?
I have to do something creative. So when I wasn't writing, you know, I was crafting. I love taking pieces of metal and jewelry apart and putting them together in some new way. I love making jewelry, but I love gardening. I love being out in the natural world. So gardening to me is also another way of being creative, you know, planting seeds. And, you know, it's such an art form of, you know, knowing what to plant where and trying to visualize how this is all going to look in the end. Definitely I feel like I have to be creating something or I'm wasting my time, you know.
Right.
And definitely the natural world is so important to me. I love being out in nature. I spend a lot of time in upstate New York in the Catskills, and I just love being surrounded by the mountains and being reminded that there's a world out there that's much bigger than the noise that's going through my little head.
Right. And that's important to realize, because we don't often think about the fact that there's a larger world outside of our own way of being.
And that we all fit into this larger world in some way that we haven't figured out yet, but we all somehow fit together in it.
Right. Well, what kind of work are you most drawn to reading yourself? Do you find yourself reading work similar to your own or completely different?
Yeah, you know, I'll go through phases, but like I mentioned, I love like natural poets like Mary Oliver. I try to challenge myself to really just read different works. Facebook's been wonderful for that. I've become friends with so many poets and writers from around the world. So it's just really fun to see what we all do, you know, and how our voices are so different. But I also like to read a little science fiction, and I've had this little science fiction book I've had on the back burner for many, many years, because I do love the quirky as well.
Right. Well, favor us again with another piece of your work. Actually, several pieces of your work, and I will not interrupt this time.
Oh, no, please interrupt. So I'll read two more from the new collection. Again, it's the collection's called The Wild Essential. And this one is called A Beautiful Rain. It was also, you know, again, Mary Ann Slaughter's been so wonderful to me at the Song Is. She's been so generous in publishing my work. And this one actually won the water drought contest over there. So thank you again, Mary Ann, and for Ethan, who also judged that one. It's called A Beautiful Rain. This one I also had a really nice experience at a reading. A woman who doesn't read much poetry, who happened to be in the audience, came over to me. She said, "I don't get poetry at all." And then she told me what this poem meant to her, and I was like, "You nailed it on the head. You got it completely." So I always think of that woman when I read this poem as well.
All right.
So again, it's called A Beautiful Rain. You feel like a drought, yes. But the soil does not crack with your footsteps, nor do your bare feet kick up dust. Your breath does not draw water from the dirt or cause words to crumble between your teeth. There is earth in you, yes, but not sand, not rock, not desert, nothing sharp or arid. Your edges breathe and bend. You pulse in all the right places. There is a pool in your heart, deep and sustaining. Nothing has withered. No one will drown here or shrivel to bone. There is storm in your veins, yes, but not a dry gust. It is a beautiful rain, and somewhere beneath it, a field of wild grass and tulips is spinning itself to life. Thank you for listening to that one. Okay. All right, and I'll read one other from Wild Essential. This one is called "I Keep Checking My Samsung Galaxy for Meaning." As if the universe had fingertips that were not far too vast to type, or its messages could swirl through cloud and silicon and materialize in my inbox. As if I will awaken to a divine text wrapped in a glowing bow of light that says, "Child, all these fraying ends will someday tie together." While the clues I seek burst into a seamless display of codes and strings, as if everything I need to know isn't already sitting in the icy stillness of this moonless field, or swelling in the gap between two breaths. Okay. I have a love-hate relationship with my phone.
Well, do you know we have a caller? We have a caller.
Oh, yay.
All right.
Hello.
All right, hold on 1 second. Caller, okay. You're on the air. Erica 301. Hello,
hi,
caller.
Hi, Michael. Michael, Claudine.
Yes.
Hi, it's Marianne.
Hi.
I've been really enjoying the show. You sound so great together.
Oh, thank you. Your ears are burning. It's mentioning you.
Do you have a question for Claudine, Marianne?
Oh gosh. You know, I think I will. What do you see as the role of form in your poetry?
I'm not a formalist. I so respect people who are, though, because it takes so much discipline. So I really, really admire that and respect it. For me, it's more, I think I rather than put a lot of emphasis in form, I put it, I think, in sound, in lyricism. So I don't know if I, you know, answered that fully, but it's about sound. And, you know, and when I write, I have to read out loud at the same time.
Oh.
So it's all about, hearing the sound and what it will sound like aloud when it's finished, you know.
Yeah, these poems sound great on the radio. I'm really enjoying it, and it's too bad that Ethan is at his tennis class.
But I believe it's on podcast. Right? I listen to yours on podcast.
Yeah.
It was also wonderful hearing you.
Thanks.
Well, let me ask this question. You talked about sound. What is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice?
I think this is where poetry has helped me too. I think my written voice is much more powerful than my speaking voice, for certain. I find that I could speak with much more authority on the page than I do in daily life. I think because until the moment that someone reads my poems, it's a one-way dialogue, and I could just write and not be concerned about the immediate response from another. I think in returning to poetry, it's enabled me to find this confident voice within myself, and to speak with a little more authority than I did before I started writing again. You know.
Well, I would have never known that you did not speak with authority.
I guess it depends who you talk to.
I would have never known. Now, do you belong to a writing community?
Yeah, I do. And it's been so important and such a support for me. So I started going to an open mic night right in my own neighborhood in New York. I live in Westchester, and I joined a community, and it was the first time I ever read a poem out loud, and I remember being terrified. And you know, they helped. Yeah, and you know, it's such a wonderful group of people. It's called For Love of Words. I go once a month. I try to, and it's a supportive network. And we're all there for each other, to listen to each other, to support each other, to be an audience for each other. So I highly recommend, you know, if people are not part of something like that, it's really helpful. You know, so hello for the love of words out there.
All right.
Hopefully someone of them's listening. You know.
Favor us again. Favor us again with another piece as we close.
Okay. So I'll read this one because it was in The Wild Essential, and I'm actually playing around with doing something more with it for a new collection I'm working with. This one is called Magnolias. Listen. I need to say just once in this lifetime that when I look at you, I see a landscape alive and soaked in magnolias, where I find myself home in fields I have never and always known, to which each and every turn I return. Thank you. Okay. So I think that's all of my selections for the evening.
Right. Well, let me ask this question. When people hear your work, they usually want more. What's next for you as a poet?
I mentioned, you know, I've been tinkering with this collection of sci-fi love poems set place in the multiverse. I have been working on this for years now, like pretty much since I started writing. And so I've always been working on it on the side while I was doing the other projects. So at some point, I'm either going to decide to pull the plug on it or start submitting it. So we'll see. But I also just wrote a children's book with my daughter.
Oh, really?
And I would absolutely love to see this published. It would mean so much to me. So,
What's the premise?
It's very profound. It's called A Bug in the Tub.
Okay.
It's a humorous story, but really about that realizing that things aren't always as bad as they seem, you know, and not rushing to judgment that things are not something that we can handle. And then I also mentioned I'm currently editing an anthology with Transcendent Zero Press and Dustin Pickering, and it's an anthology of love poems. And that one, the submission period it's open till the end of the month. So if there are any poets out there who are listening and have some good love poems, definitely send them over. You can stop by the Transcendent Zero Press website for more details on how to send it in, because I do love to edit as well as write.
Well, let me ask this question. Where can we purchase your work currently?
Yeah, so, except for the chapbook, all of my books are available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com and, some local independent stores. But you can go on Amazon. And if anyone's interested in my website, it's ClaudineNashPoetry.com.
All right. Claudine Nash, I'd like to thank you. I'd like to thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a great hour.
Oh, thank you so much. This has been so much fun and so lovely. So thank you so much for giving me the chance to share my work with you and the listeners.
Well, it's an open invitation for you to come back. So anytime you're ready, just let me know. And it'll be another night with Claudine Nash.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, everybody. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.